Expanding the conversation beyond the weight room and the track, involving all of the professions that are critical to high-level physical performance. Performance Talk with Yule and Chris is where professionals come together to discuss everything that is related to performance from multiple perspectives. Listen as we join hosts Yule Gordon, Chris Costa, and their guest, and hear what is going on in the world of performance.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Performance Talk. I'm Yule Gordon. My partner is Chris Costa. We are back, and we're excited to get into a little bit of conversation with our next guest.
So today's guest is Jacob Tober. Jacob, how are you doing today?
I'm good, guys. Thanks. How are you guys?
What you guys don't know is all the issues that we've been having for the past 15 minutes trying to get this recording to actually work. First, it started with trying to get Yule in the room, and then we rectified that. And then no one could hear each other, and then it became echoes. So get a laugh with us while you can. Before we get serious, let's all get that laughed in. For those of you that are not familiar with Jacob, he is referred to as VBD Coach on the social channels. He is a strength coach by trade, but more recently, he's taken a dive into the tech industry, specifically with velocity-based solutions. And that solution is called Metric VBT. Now, Jacob's going to tell us a little bit about Metric VBT.
Yeah, so strength coach by trade, did a sports science degree down here in Melbourne, Australia, which is the equivalent of a biomechanics or a kinetics or human physiology kind of degree. Been working in the private sector at a private gym here in Melbourne Southeast for the last 8 years as a coach, running internships, teaching, educating sort of outside, more on the practical, on the in the field kind of side of things with university students though. And then just recently, my brother is a computer scientist and he codes. And we're just sort of playing with velocity-based training and we're training in the gym with the string buses and the accelerometers. And we're just talking about it. And he said, I reckon we could do that on a phone using the phone camera. And I was like, how? With computer vision, you know, you kind of track the bar and stuff like that. And so that was about 2.5 years ago now that we had that first conversation. And just the little side hobby project has evolved into a full-blown second business within our business. And we're now developing an app called Metric VBT, as you mentioned, and it tracks barbell velocity using no devices. So you set your phone up, put on to the lift, choose your exercise, enter the weight, press record, and then you can record and get precise to two decimal place velocity on your lift, range of motion, rep count, power output, all that kind of stuff without any additional hardware. So no need to manage extra batteries, Bluetooth connections. It just happens all on your iPhone.
Is this strictly iPhone or do you have an Android-based solution as well?
As of today, so March 2022, we are only on iPhone, but we are going to be working on Android in the future. So we've only got one developer. It's tricky to develop across two platforms when we're developing something right. Unique like this and bespoke. So we've just gone with one. Let's just get the iPhone solved first, build a nice slick app for that. And then once that's up and running, we'll start looking at Android as well. So porting the same idea across to Android, but it'll need a few tweaks to be able to run on the different devices with different cameras and things like that.
With all the data-driven technology that's out there right now, why a velocity-based approach?
Great question. I think it's still an area that's done poorly, especially in terms of software. I think there's a lot of hardware that does really good, precise tracking, whether it be, you know, some of the accelerometers are getting quite good these days, the string devices, the rack-mounted camera systems as well, like Perch, they're really good. But I think there still lacks something at the mass adoption level that's cheap that you can, you know, with Metric, you can try it for free. So you can download it and start using it for free instantly on your phone without having to order something online, wait a couple of weeks for shipping, get it, learn how to work the hardware and the software. We think having something simple on your phone app-based is obviously a big win. So that means you can be in more hands more quickly without having to ship a physical product. It's nice given how hard it is to come across chips and hardware right now if you're manufacturing. Right. But also I think the software needs to be done better. So I think giving lifters and performance coaches or trainers more context on their velocity during training, instead of just spitting out a whole bunch of complex numbers, actually doing something with those numbers and giving the right feedback at the right time. So I'm a big fan of using velocity contextually. So I do my bench press. I'm about to go bench press today. Today's an upper body day. I do my bench. It doesn't really matter what I lift compared to either of you guys on your bench press, but what really matters is how I did compared to myself in the past. And so having that information in real time while I'm training is really important. I do my 60 kilos, my 135-pound set, and I look at the velocity and go, okay, today my best rep was 1 meter per second. What was it last week? or a month ago, or what's my all-time best on that weight, I think those numbers serve as really context to help me improve my own training. Go, okay, I'm a little fatigued today, or, oh, I'm looking good. Things are moving really nicely, so I can sort of push and get after it. I think that kind of context isn't done well in the software currently, and so we think that's also a big area for us to improve in this space, in the velocity tracking space, is give athletes and coaches more easy to use and easy to digest data when they need it.
The easy to use is always important because simple is better in my book, but when they need it is the critical piece. You can have that right at the bench doing what you need to do. With everybody filming everything they're doing already, it's not that big of a jump.
You know, exactly. It's already an ingrained habit for the lifters. Yeah. So not much to just change the app.
I think the app-based stuff that athletes can use on the phone to track data, to gather data, stuff like that are real. Well, I'm back with the hammer and chisel. That's when I started. So you carried around a big tablet. Then it was notepads. Then it was, you know, whatever the other thing was that started off was supposed to be digital, but it was analog digital. That's really a thing. I don't really know. What I'm trying to say is the information that we have today for coaches and athletes to use is something that I think has been really helpful, as long as we keep it in the realm of needed information when it's needed. So if you're not going to use the information.
Exactly. So one of the things we've been doing is we've really been playing around how few numbers and settings can we put into the app, but still get a really good result. So you can use some of these devices and you'll get an Excel spreadsheet with 10 columns and all your sets down the side, and this massive big export of all this data. But you have to then go and, you know, either your team of interns or you, if you're a coach on your own or in the private sector, you get your employees, right, then go crunch these numbers. And then the athletes are, they've already left the session. They don't care anymore. They've moved on with their lives. And you're sitting here crunching, what's their estimated 1 RM? What's this? And you can't use it in real time. So I want to be able to, after 2 or 3 sets of that bench press warm-up, I want to know whether I'm ready to go or not. I want to know if I'm in a high state of readiness or a low state of readiness,
right,
and make those adjustments to my work sets from the session in real time. So I'm going to go, oh, today's a good day. Green lights, feeling good, moving the bar fast. Range of motion is good. You know, power is good. Let's go. Let's get after those heavy weights. Let's maybe make this a PB day. I'll get after my normal planned session. Well, conversely, so, I'm fatigued. I'm tired. Didn't sleep well. Let's adjust.
Now we're talking about velocity-based training and gathering that data. I know that the other professionals that are listening to us today and some of the athletes understand what that is, but, you know, let's break this down to its simplest form and explain to our listeners what, you know, velocity-based training is.
Yeah, so it's a bad name to start with. I think velocity-based training is the wrong name because it's not just velocity. We can actually use so many metrics in the gym to track and sort of quantify performance objectively. So really what we're doing is we're using some sort of technology. In our case, we'll talk about metrics. So we're using the camera on your smartphone to record and measure positional data from your lift. So it records where the barbell is in time over the course of a set of 10 reps. And each rep then has a velocity, concentrically and eccentrically. It has pauses. It has a curve. It has a bar path. All these different variables that we can't really get just from pen and paper or chisel and stone, right, as you mentioned. Yeah. So having a technology allows us to go deeper into the lift and go, okay, what happened during each rep? You know, how much power did you generate at the maximum point, so the peak power? How much mean velocity did you have across the entire from the bottom to the top of that rep? By being able to analyze that, we can add more data to our training beyond just load, sets, reps, and RPE. We can kind of get an objective measure of how well you're training. And again, when we compare it to what you did in the past, you can go, okay, how well are you training today relative to your own normal training? That's really what velocity-based training is. But you can do this with tempo. So you can measure, like if you do sort of hypertrophy type training, you can do tempo work with velocity-based training technology. You can measure range of motion to make sure when athletes go heavier, they don't shorten up their range of motion, which is a really common thing. You know, you do your warm-up sets, 45 centimeters on the bench press. Then you do your heavy sets, it's 40, and then you go heavy again, it's 35. Right. You're shortening that range to try and cheat through the set. And so it's a way to keep athletes honest as well. So if they're lifting and then, you know, they go heavier, but they do it with compromised form or with a shorter range of motion or with a different bar path, you can go, hey, look at these bar paths side by side. What's going on here? You need to fix that. Let's tidy up that range. Let's take a little bit of weight off the bar, but let's do it better, more crisply, with more power potentially.
And I think that's really that, the bar path and the range of motion is really, really critical for novice lifters, those just getting into a powerlifting program or a strength conditioning program or whatever the case may be. Because in the past, we've sat there and we've said, oh, okay, you're not hitting in the same place on your chest. Or, you know, if we're talking about bench press, or your right arm is lagging behind, or your left arm. They start to look at this stuff and they can see why they're not and how to correct it. And not just the film, but the information as well, which is helpful.
The combination of the two is really nice. So with Metric, you get video and you get data at the same time. So you can watch the video and then look at the numbers and go, oh yeah, I see what happened on reps 2 and 3 in the middle there. Let's focus on that next time. Let's take a little bit of while. Let's have a couple minutes rest. Let's try again. You can make those subjective and objective assessments at the same time with something like this.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we are here and we're talking to Jacob Dover, Mr. VBT or Coach VBT, VBT Coach. We're here with him and we're talking velocity-based training and some technology that can help in general with your training program. We're going to get into some other stuff a little bit later, but I want to keep going on this. Chris has gotten to the in-house tech guy, as you can see. However, he's brought me along nice and slow, so I'm starting to actually like working with data a little bit. I just don't want to be a fire hose, you know, taking it from a fire hose. You got to sprinkle it on me a little bit, not too much. So talk to me about other uses. Can you use this in, say, body weight training?
So specifically with Metric, with the app, it only tracks barbell lifts at the moment. But you could use velocity-based training concepts in body weight training for sure. So if we're talking about VBT as a sort of a method or an approach to training, then really what we're doing is we're just adding data to our lifts. So it comes back to your point, though. You don't want this data from a fire hose. So if you're doing some sets of push-ups at the end of your workout as a finisher, do you really care too much about how fast those push-ups are, or do you just really care that they get done? You just want three sets of 15. Exactly. So in that kind of context, then I'm not really too fussed. No one's really too fussed with that. But this is where it's sort of situation dependent. If you've got some athletes, maybe some junior athletes who are a little bit weaker, or some girls aren't too comfortable with their push-ups at this stage, so you need to sort of encourage them, get them going on, you could use things like velocity-based training as additional metrics to their push-ups. So, for example, week one with our group of junior athletes, right, we're just going to do 3 sets of 5 push-ups. I just want you to get 15 centimeters of range of motion. You don't have to get your chest to the ground. Just get, you know, lock into the core, not a strong plank position. Let's just do 15 centimeters on every rep. The rep only counts to cover 15 centimeters. Next week, we're going to do 20 centimeters, so 5 inches. Then we're going to go 6 or 7 inches, and then we're going to increase that range of motion each week and use that as a form of progressive overload for these athletes that can't yet handle a full just to ground push-up. And so we can use, in this situation, range of motion as a way to encourage them to progress onwards and progress further. Similar sort of thing for, say, jumping. You could use a velocity-based training metric to look at the height or the flight time or the contact time on your jumping and use that as your measure of performance. And so, okay, we need a certain amount of flight time, or you need to be progressing your flight time or increasing your peak power at the point of takeoff. So those kind of metrics can be applied to body weight movements. So it just sort of depends. And it really depends on whether you care that much. So if you've got a group of seasoned athletes who can stack push-ups all day, no one cares what that velocity is. Just do it. Do it explosively. Yeah, right. Get a good burn. Get a finish in. Get gassed.
Right. We're talking about a career or a training career lifespan. So from the novice all the way to the pro. You kind of covered, you know, velocity-based training and how it can be used for the novice and the pro. What about that athlete that's in the middle? It's maybe coming back from an injury, maybe trying to improve performance. We already have a camera on him, or we're already getting film on him to correct movement issues or to just make sure he's moving efficiently. So we're doing that from a movement side. Now, how do we add in VBT to make that come together? Just the guy that's still, or the girl that's in the middle. They're going to be super elite, you know, but they're not there yet. But they're definitely not novice.
Late high school, early college kind of athlete, has a bit of weight room experience, but they're not there yet. Yeah, I get you. So in the team sport sort of, I think of velocity-based training in two categories. The kind of strength athletes, so powerlifters is the classic example, but strongman, even Olympic lifting to a degree, people who just want to maximize their 1 RM. So the goal, the gym is in itself the goal. What we're talking about now is sort of more your athletic development situation. So basketball or baseball or football, rugby, golf, swimming, athletics, whatever it might be. Their goal in the gym is actually to create transfer. So they want, you know, the exercises, the activities they do in the gym, in the weight room, to transfer into better swim times, higher high jumps, longer throws if they're a quarterback or a baseball pitcher, whatever it might be. So they want work they do in the gym to transfer back onto the field of play. So for that athlete, how much weight you lift is only one of the things that will influence that transfer. So if you're a seven-foot basketballer, so you're a center, you're a power forward, you're a big guy, girl, long, rangy, tight ankles potentially, you're not going to be doing incredibly impressive double body weight, full depth back squats. That's right. Just not part of who you are as a human, and it's not going to help you as an athlete. That person's never going to get that deep on the court. They don't really need to be loading that as well in the gym. It just introduces more risk to that spine, which probably already has issues given they're that tall at that age. So for them, we would prefer, at Core Advantage, our gym, we tend to prefer them to squat sort of moderate depths with a decent load. We still want to get them strong. Like, there's no point not getting strong. Strength is still going to be valuable for this athlete.
Right.
But then there'll be an upper limit. So there'll be a point at which more load on their back is more risk than it's worth. So the risk-reward ratio starts tipping out of our favor. So we go, they're a 100-kilo athlete. They're squatting 140. That's pretty good, given how deep they're going. So we're going to look at single leg. We're going to, you know, change it. The program do different things. But we still want to be doing that squat stimulus. That's still a good exercise for them. So squatting 140 each week is still a good idea. But that's going to get pretty boring after a while. If you're just going in every week, you do 60. Sorry, I'm looking at kilos, but double everything for pounds, if you will. So you do 60, you do 100, you do 120, you do 140. That's going to get pretty boring after a while if you're just doing, you know, three sets of five at the top every single week. Maybe three sets of three in season. You know, that's the limit of the variation. But we can use velocity as a motivational tool. So let's get to that 140, but I want you to squat it faster than you did last week. And then each week, I want you to try and set a velocity PB. So do a new personal best velocity for that weight than you did last week. And so we can use it as a bit of a motivational tool. And so you can do that not just at the top weight, but across all their sets. So each week, when you lift that weight, lift it as fast as you can, apply good intent, you know, really try and explode through each rep and lift with good explosiveness. And that will then help keep that athlete motivated, say if they're at that point of law of diminishing returns. But it's also a nice new way for that athlete to track and monitor progress. So, yeah, the weight might not be moving up every single week. I might not be adding enormous amounts of weight like the football team is, but I've got my own set of metrics I can track. So now I'm looking at my power. I'm looking at my range of motion, trying to increase that a little bit as well. I'm trying to lift with a higher velocity each week. So we can use those numbers and track them over time and use that as new best. So instead of going from 140 to 150 kilos on the bar, we're just going from 0.6 to 0.65 meters per second. And so it gives that athlete a new number to focus their energy on, not just plates. And so they can focus their energy on lifting with really good intent, which in turn, if we go back to where we very first started on this kind of question, the goal is athletic transfer. And so if you're a basketballer, you jump with speed. So speed is a big part of jumping. It's not just force. You need to apply that force quickly. So if we teach this athlete to squat faster, they're not only applying force, but they're applying that force with power as well. So we're actually probably improving the transfer they're getting back onto the field of play by having them lift more aggressively and more explosively, the same way they'll do if they go up for a block or a rebound or a dunk. We can kind of increase that transfer through more focused, better metrics. It's kind of like changing the goalposts, giving them a better way to focus their energy in the gym.
Let's go back to the technical side of things where you just mentioned meters per second and variation in meters per second. We know that there are ranges. My mind is serving me appropriately. 1.5 starts to put you above that power, meaning you're moving something very fast for that particular load, we'll say. And also, what you're mentioning, one might say, well, that Jacob, that changes the biomotor ability. Well, no, not when you're talking about 0.5 meter per second change, as you mentioned, or even 5 meter per second change. Yeah, if we go down super low and we're making these very small changes, you're not changing the biomotor ability. But let's talk specifically about those ranges. I think that's a good technical aspect that coaches often either miss out on or don't receive the education on in terms of, okay, so what does a 95% 1RM look like? How fast should I be moving? What does a 55% 1RM look like? How fast should I be moving there? What are my goals? Where do I want my athletes to hit from a meter per second standpoint? And let's just say almost every single device out there has either been created in Australia or the UK. So, and just from pure essentialness in our field, we use the metric system. So it's always going to be meters per second. So coaches have to get used to that. They're not accustomed to that. But once you know the parameters, I think it makes it a lot easier, right? If you know that there's a stage, it really doesn't matter whether it says meter per second. You're just looking at that number to say, okay, are we falling in that line?
Yeah, it's just whatever the number is, it's arbitrary. The metrics in this situation are arbitrary. It's really just a pair over time or between athletes if you're competing. So if you've got two athletes side by side, they're competing on a one times body weight bench press or a double body weight squat, it's about competing. Now, the zone idea is interesting. I actually don't think it's that helpful for many people because the zones are highly variable by individual and by exercise. So they were originally developed by Dr. Brian Mann, one of the godfathers of velocity-based training, absolute genius in the space, written some really good papers, done some really good work practically and academically in VBT. He originally developed the idea of five strength zones associated with different speeds. So like you mentioned, 0.5, under 0.5 is absolute strength. 0.5 to 0.75 meters per second is, I believe, is accelerated strength. And then you've got speed strength, strength speed, and then starting strength, which is kind of like you're really faster. The problem is different range of motion will change how fast you can move with movement. So we take that 7 foot back squatter, that 7 foot bar squatter doing, you know, maybe half back squats. They're actually going to cover more range of motion at half squat than say a short power lifter would in their full squat. So the different biomotor effect, factors, the different biomechanics of those two lifts means the acceleration profiles will be really different. So if that athlete were to squat, to, you know, say we use those zones, and go, okay, we want you in an absolute strength zone. That 7 foot athlete may not physically be able to squat below 0.5 meters per second because they get too much acceleration at the top. So they just move too fast at the top. So they'll never be able to lift heavy enough to get below that zone without failing, but without actually not being able to do that. So it's above 100% they want to for that range of motion they're capable of. Whereas we take the elite power lifter, they might be able to grind out a max effort squat as slow as maybe 0.1 or 0.08 meters per second. So like crawling up out of the hole right as they slowly lift weight. So for these two different individuals, those fixed absolute zones are not going to be applicable. They're just not going to work. So if we tried to take the power and go, okay, you're doing absolute strength work, well, 0.5 per second for them might be 60% of 1RM. They might be moving a really submaximal load and they're already in what we call an absolute strength zone. So for them, their absolute strength zone is actually more like 0.2 meters per second or 0.1 even meters per second, where they're working at 95% of 1RM and up. So it's really, it's quite individual where those sort of different zones fit. So for you kind of intermediate athletes, like we talked about before, you stand decent level of strength, sort of homogenous kind of group, standard height, standard build, all those kind of things. Those kind of those ideas of those zones will work. But even within that, there's going to be some variation. Athletes might be springy versus kind of more grind in how they lift. So their velocity profile will change. And height has a really big factor as well. So the length at which you can travel with the bar will really affect those. So instead, what I like to do is I sort of like to look at the zones kind of more on an individual basis. So you kind of need to do a 1RM with an athlete, record the velocity of it, work out what their individual, we call that the minimum velocity threshold, work out what their velocity of their 1RM is, and then apply that back to the rest of their lifts. And then you'll be able to find where their profile is and try and improve it over time. So over time, your 1RM should be getting slower as you improve your strength ability to grind through a rep. But all the velocities in the middle should go up. You should try and lift your 60% as fast as possible, your 80% as fast as possible relative to your own numbers.
Yeah, this is one of those situations where the independent variable is, in fact, the athlete and the athlete's build.
Right.
And unfortunately, we're still stuck in this paradigm of trying to compare athlete to athlete, right? We still stage these athletes, especially in our country. I don't know if you do it so much over there. We have these amateur athletes and we're starting to stage them and rank them, you know, either statewide or countrywide. Where does this athlete fall? But they miss that really key piece in what you're talking about is anthropometrics. We don't base them on anthropometrics. We might base them on position, which is fine positionally. How do they compete? But when we start to talk about physiology, we have to look at more of what you're talking about, which is what is their personal ideals? How are we meeting and falling trends for them appropriate to producing improvement in biomotor abilities? Because, yeah, I agree with you 1,000%. They are going to be different for everybody. And when an athlete says, but coach, I didn't hit that, your numbers are going to always be different. And it's not going to be different because you're weaker or you're stronger. It's just that your numbers are going to be different because of exactly what you said. Height variation, weight variation, muscle composition, quality of muscle, training age, position, all of these factors play such a key role in determining where they fall in. And I think that should be the take home. Don't and did not pick up anything from listening to this podcast. Rewind it back about 5 minutes and listen to that until it sinks in. That's really the key to understanding technology, whether it is velocity based with an accelerometer, with a phone, with metric VBT, or it's on a force plate.
Well, for right now, gentlemen, let's go ahead and up here for a quick break, and then we'll get back into some more of this discussion. We're going to talk about ground level four, a holistic multidisciplinary approach to physical preparation for athletes at all levels. The focus is on mature-minded athletes who are ready to work at a high level physically, intellectually, and emotionally. The plan is based on collaboration with athlete, coach, parents, and others to develop an individualized plan that is designed to enable athletes to reach their highest level of physical preparation. It's a holistic career-focused process, continuous planning, ongoing advice and consultation along with management of all things physical performance. To learn more, leave a message, and they'll get back to you at Ground Level 4, 830-216-8029. Okay, back to what we were talking about. What I hear you saying is, Chris brought up some other points along the same lines, is that, you know, every athlete is different. Therefore, the best use of VBT training is individual athletes in their own box. So they're not competing with other athletes in their training.
They're always to compete. So we can take that idea. So if we're talking about just raw velocity on a back squat, right, it's hard to compare that side by side, even when we go relative to body weight. So a one times body weight squat for two different individuals will look quite different. But when we want to compete, I think power becomes a really valuable metric. So the power is kind of takes your velocity number and then it factors in how much weight's on the bar. So it's really just in a simple term, it's not exactly this equation, but it's roughly it's weight times velocity. How heavy you lift and how fast you lift it, there's a trade-off between those two. So your peak power point will happen, or your maximum power point will happen somewhere around sort of 50%, very roughly 50% of your 1RM. 50 to 60% of your 1RM, depending on exercise, will be the point of maximum power output. The nice thing about that is you can then compete with two athletes side by side on their power output for, say, Olympic lifts. Really great way to drive intent with your Olympic lifts and not have athletes just chase really ugly, heavy cleans is have them go, I don't care what weight you use, I want you to generate as many watts as possible, most wattage as you possibly can. Okay. And then from a competition point of view, you can take that and you can go, let's take that number of watts. Often it's like, you know, 800, 1,000, 1,200, big numbers here of watts generated on, say, an Olympic lift for a good lifter. And then you can divide that by body weight. So 1,200 watts divided by 100 kilo body weight, that's 12 watts per kilo of body weight that athlete's generating. Now that's your competition number. Okay. Big dogs, good cleans, nice and powerful athletes, they can generate 12, 15 watts per kilo of body weight on their Olympic lifts. Start a leaderboard. Who can generate the most watts per kilo or watts per pound? You can use that number as well. Watts per unit of body weight they have. This gives all smaller athletes a chance to compete. They might only be a 170, 180 pound athlete versus the big 220, 250 pound lineman in your football team. But those little guys, they can clean 80 kilos. They can clean more than one times body weight. So they're going to be able to generate tremendous amounts of power on, say, that 50 to 60 kilo range and get a really big number here and have a really great competition on this number that's a little fairer and a little more absolute across populations.
A little bit different. And coaches, if you're out there listening, that's a little bit different than seeing who's got the heaviest squat, because it's almost always going to be the bigger guy. It's almost always going to be the bigger guy. So I know it's pretty important at the junior levels, especially over here in the high schools, especially the strength sports like, you know, football and stuff like that. They like to put the name on the board and who did the most of this. Well, for some more incentive and a little more buy-in possibly to your program, velocity-based training and using the app that you guys are developing here could really be another tool for a source of buy-in. Hey, absolutely. Now I can compete a little bit. I can jump in there at 180 pounds and my squat is as good as yours because I'm producing just as much wattage. And whatever that means, I know what it means, but whatever that means to the athlete,
again, units are arbitrary here, really. It doesn't actually matter. It just matters about numbers compared to each other or compared over time.
And yet we need to be careful with power-focused activities for individuals with inexperienced training age. Careful. Plyometric power-focused activities are very demanding. And if mechanical patterns are not controlled, then we are setting athletes up. So, I mean, we often see that with younger kids and plyometric type work. It's not to say that they can't do it or shouldn't do it. It's to say that we just need to be smart about how much we program and how much focus we place on hitting those big numbers until we're sure that they're both able to control themselves while under high velocity.
Oh, absolutely. I think that is not for necessarily novice athletes or novice in as far as training IQ goes, and maybe something you start introducing towards the end of the intermediate phase of training. Maybe when you're a junior and senior in high school, you can start toying with the idea of competing right there and stuff like that. But yeah, I agree with Chris. Anything we do nowadays, we have to be careful because we're pushing athletes as far as we can.
I would argue that chronological age has nothing to do with it. We can't make it chronologically age-based. It doesn't matter whether you're a junior or senior. It matters how much training age you have. If you've been training since you were 13 years old and you've become proficient at 16, then you're prepared.
Right, well, we do a similar thing. We kind of keep things confidence-based.
It absolutely
is. And I agree.
So you have to reach a certain level of strength first before you can go chasing these sort of big numbers. We'll introduce athletes to the ideas of wattage early, but we'll keep it with things like a bodyweight jump.
Right.
Like you've got three attempts here to get your maximum wattage, but you're only competing with yourself. There's no leaderboard. Once you hit that, say maybe you're a 1.5 times bodyweight squatter, you've been in the gym for 4 years, and you're over a certain age, because we still have to give skeletons time to develop. Like a 13-year-old skeleton is still a 13-year-old skeleton, even if they've been in the gym for 4 years.
Yep.
So if you're over 15 and you've been in the gym for 2 years and you're squatting above bodyweight, all right, and you've been cleaning for 6 months, 12 months, whatever your number is, depending on how good of a coach you are and how well you can get your athlete moving on those power cleans, then, okay, now this issue is out there of loaded power. How much power can you generate on any load on a power clean? But we're talking about now, you know, athletes that would kick most other recreational gym goers' butts, and they're only 16, 17 years old. They'd walk into an Anytime Fitness or anything down the corner, and that'd be the one getting all the stares going, damn, who's that guy? Who's that girl? We're talking about serious lifters at this stage, and they're skeletally more mature because they're now 6 to 7, they're getting towards the end of their growth spurt in general terms. But for most athletes, obviously there's exceptions where athletes are later bloomers. So then you have to factor in, okay, you're 16, you're still quite a bit below your age or height. So maybe you haven't the growth spurt yet. So we need to be a little more conservative with you. You know, the Scottie Pippins of the world who don't grow their last 6 inches until the last year of college and changes their lives. So there are individual factors. And of course, just like velocity, there's exceptions to every rule.
Right.
But there are also some frameworks and some guidelines, like I mentioned.
I agree with both you guys. You can't tie it to one thing, but you got to operate within a framework. Otherwise, you kind of a loose thing you got there. I always found working with, if you're talking about training age or training IQ, sometimes the same thing, not always. When you can get the training age and the training IQ together, then you probably got the athlete that's ready to move. If you got them separated, maybe they're not quite as developed as they may think they are, but
the boys, in our case, it's always the boys that are the slowest to get their mental state to match their physical.
Right.
The girls get it day one.
It's an individual thing, and you don't want to tie it to, you don't want to hold a 14-year-old back if he's ready to do something, and vice versa. You don't want to make a 17-year-old do something they're not quite ready to do yet. Something. So from a training perspective, looking at a velocity-based approach, how would you develop your program or introduce velocity-based training into your program when you haven't had it?
The nice thing about velocity is it integrates with existing systems. So you don't have to become a VBT guy. You don't have to change your Instagram handle to VBT coach and start posting graphs of studies and all that kind of stuff to get good value out of this. You can integrate it in, and I think that's a product of the hardware being expensive. You buy a couple of $1,000 unit or a couple of $1,000 units and put them around your gym, you want to get a return on your investment. Like, that makes perfect sense. If you put VBT technology in your gym, everyone better be training with VBT, you know, as the head coach, otherwise going to be pretty mad at your interns for not applying it and your athletes for not using it. So I think lowering the barrier to entry and making it cheaper, as there are cheaper hardwares now, and there's now also about to be a free app available on the App Store, in metric. I think lowering the barrier to entry to starting to dabble in VBT is a really big step. I think being able to just go, oh, let's just play around with this. Let's just experiment with a few athletes at a time. We've got some more advanced lifters. Let's get them tracking velocity on their cleans and their squats. Let's see what happens and let's play from there. So I think having a kind of a experimental mindset, I think, is important here, because there's so many different applications that, like I mentioned, evolve and fit into existing programs. So if you already program with percentage-based training, you don't have to change that from day one. If you already use RPEs, you don't have to throw them out the day you get your Velocity device or the day you download your Velocity app. You can integrate Velocity just a pinch into that existing program and see where it fits well for you. So maybe it's as simple as something like, with our sets, we're doing a high volume phase, you can go beyond 30% fatigue within a set. So from the best rep of a set to the last rep of a set, that can't be any more than a 30% drop off. And so that's usually a pretty good indication that you're working hard, but not working to failure. And maybe when it comes closer to the season, you tighten that from 30% up to 20%. Okay, you're only allowed to have 20% fatigue. So you can do 3 sets of 6 or 3 sets of 20% failure, whichever comes first. So it's a way of kind of auto regulating the volume that happens in training by giving athletes kind of dynamic limits based on how fresh they are, how ready they are to train, and also how much effort they put in their sets. So if they're slacking, their sets get cut short. If they're working hard, but they're fatigued, their sets will also get cut short. So that's one simple application that goes in with whatever else it is you're doing in your training. Otherwise, is to use that, like that leaderboard idea. Just put a leaderboard in the gym, have two scores, peak power on your Olympic lifts and jump height. We're just going to compete on two things across the gym, workout A, workout B. Workout A is the Olympic lift A. We start with our Olympic lifts. We're looking for peak power on whatever load. And top 5 on the leaderboard at the end of the month, they get a prize, they get glory, whatever the case might be. So simple little things like that that increase motivation, increase buy-in in the gym, and get your athletes asking questions about this stuff. Oh, what is what's? What does that mean? How do I take it relative to whatever? How do I improve this? What weight should I use? Getting them invested in the training process through the data, I think, is a really good, valuable assistant coach. Anytime we start using it with an athlete who's never done it before, the first question is, what does that mean? We don't know yet. We need to do a few sets. Let's get a few sets under our belt. Let's see how you progress over time and use that data to kind of drive the influence. So there's dozens and dozens of specific applications of Velocity. I think it's just a matter of exploring them and finding which ones work for you and then trying them. And if they don't, scrap it 2 weeks later. Not everyone hated that. That made the training too long. It got in the way. The tech was tricky. Find something else. There are ways that you can use this, and you don't have to use them all. I think that's a really big key as well. You don't have to use all these ideas. Just a couple.
Yeah, and you don't have to sample every single movement either. Not every movement has to be VBT based, right? Or nonetheless, we don't need to look at. Yeah, that's it.
My first 2 key licks get Velocity. Everything else is just reps and load, as it normally was. Sometimes it's 3 exercises if I'm doing sort of more like power and strength workout combined. But it'll be the first 2 big lifts, 1 lower, 1 upper. They're the ones that get Velocity tracked. So bench, squat, deadlift, hip thrust, Olympic lifts. Maybe like a barbell row if I'm doing something more pushing the limits on that kind of exercise. That'd be it. Yeah, 3 or 4 exercises in my training week would be all I would track here.
Have you used it at the end with, say, a similar mechanical pattern to see if as kind of like a fatigue measure at all?
Yeah, you could totally do that. So you could do, like, say, for example, RDLs. Say you do conventional deadlift or a trap bar deadlift first, then you go into RDL second. You could see how much you fatigue across those RDLs over time. It would be hard to compare the velocity of, say, the RDL to the trap bar deadlift because they are different biomechanically, but you could see how much of an effect of a heavy trap bar session would have on those RDLs and maybe cut those sets early if the fatigue starts to build up more than normal. Yeah, for sure. You can also use velocity to measure time and attention and tempo. So if you're doing high volume barbell curls and you're doing your curls with a 2 or 3 second eccentric and your athletes tend to and do that fast, you can use metric to measure tempo as well. That's a feature we're going to add in the future where you can measure tempo and keep your athletes honest to a proper full 3 seconds.
Yeah, that's kind of nice to show them instead of the countdown in time to show them how quickly they're moving.
Right.
Because they'll focus on trying to move slower versus focusing on actually sustaining that slow decline over a time signature. Mm-hmm. Like they love to attach some number. Yeah, totally. I think the only caution that you would have to, and you kind of touched on it, is the complexity of the movement. You could probably use something like a hip thrust at the end that is in some regards complex, but in the athlete that has a strong experience in it, You could use that potentially at the end to sample and see, okay, so how tired are they really after this particular session?
Yeah, and if you specifically want to measure sort of fatigue that the session causes, you could just do a jump before and after.
Yeah.
So you can do maybe a loaded or an unloaded jump, 2 attempts, max effort before, and then do the same at the end of the session and see the drop in power or jump height or speed of the jump and use that as kind of you're pretty gassed. There's a nice study actually that did that. They did a jump test, then they did a 3x4 or a 3x8 workout. So one group did half volume, the other group smashed themselves. And they showed jump recovery over 0, 6, 24, 48, and then 72 hours later. And the group that did the 3x8, so the group that did twice as much work, they were still fatigued 48 to 72 hours later, whereas the other group had actually supercompensated, actually jumping higher than they did before the workout at 48 hours. But doing less work in season, for example, is a good way to improve performance and have less fatigue effect going to game day, for example, on Friday night or whatever like that.
Chris and I were just talking about in-season work and what to do and why. And this type of work seems like it would fit nicely because you can also, measure fatigue and all those other things too, all right there from the same data. You're not doing 5 surveys and taking 6 different measurements, chiseling. So you can, sometimes we get a little serious in here, man. You got to keep it.
Not the electronic tablets. Back in our day, tablets are made of stone.
Yeah, don't chisel on your iPad, kids. It won't work. You'll end up with a broken iPad.
Somebody, I'll be getting bills in the mail. My boy broke his iPad because he got a hammer and a chisel out. But anyway, listen, we could go on and on and on about this, but I'd like to get to another part of all of our shows, and that's the professional part.
Sorry, go ahead. A quick plug as well. We talked about all those specific examples of using BBT. I've actually got a BBT book. So on my website, bbtcoach.com, is the BBT Field Guide, which is a book that has all these specific exact examples and applications. I think it's like $20 Australian, but if you follow me on Instagram and send me a DM, I'll send you a link and you can get it for free. So if anyone's interested in learning more about those dozens of specific examples I talked about, go follow me on Instagram, send me a DM, I'll send you a link and get the book for free. It's BBT Coach on Instagram. People that were like, well, what are the other examples?
Can you hear the cheers in the background?
Just keep it going, because that's usually the last 10 to 15 minutes of our show is we talk about what you're doing professionally. So nice to say. But along with, you have a book that has the other examples. That's great. What else do you have going on? What do you got, coming up for your business that you started? What's a little bit of your background and where you come from before? Early days of your strength coach, that kind of stuff. So just let us get to know Jacob a little bit.
So now most of my time is spent working on Metric. Yeah, I'm not actually doing any coding. My brother is the coder and the developer there. So he's writing the code, but I'm helping design the interface, deciding what settings to put in the app and all sort of stuff, which is taking a bit of time. And then marketing as well. So kind of we're a small team at the moment. So we're all kind of wearing a marketing hat. We're all wearing a sales hat. We're all chipping in on the code and the design and things like that. So it's all in-house.
Right.
So that takes a little more time. But then the rest of my time is spent really on my BBT Coach channels. So I've got a website, bbtcoach.com, where I've got a blog. I've got a host of my podcasts on that channel as well. So if you want to check out more podcasts like this where I've been on with other people to talk about tech or sport clients, that's there. And then I've got the book, like I mentioned, which is on there, which is it's a paid product, but really it's free. If you reach out to me and you follow me on social, the conversation about this stuff, I'm happy to give you a code for free on that. And then I'm on all the socials. So I've got a YouTube channel where I'm trying to make more videos about this content. Because there's no one really, what I noticed a couple of years ago was no one was really doing a specific focus on BBT from a practical point of view. Everyone was trying to sell a product. Everyone was kind of talking about it sometimes on the side, but no one was actually going, I'm going to go deep on this and sort of own this space. So kind of my goal is to really be the resource for all the actual specific practical applications of velocity in your training. So on YouTube, I started on Twitter this year, which is a new space for me. I've never been in there very much. And then LinkedIn, which is how we connected, trying to start being a creator and a content producer on LinkedIn, which is where you found me, which is pretty cool. Right. To be able to connect with people all around the world. And then Instagram as well. So I'm on Instagram doing a bunch of stuff there. Not on TikTok. I think I'm refusing to do TikTok. I'm not sure. People told me I should.
Yeah.
I'm too old, maybe.
Twitter, Face page, all that, man. I don't do none of that. If it wasn't for my daughter, you wouldn't see my name on any of it, but I'm on all of it just about. So
it takes a lot of time, and you get the trolls who come in there and they go, well, I didn't, that specific example doesn't recur to me, so you're full of crap and you don't know anything. But then you get other people who just out of the blue go, hey, I love your page. I read every one of your posts all the way through. The science is so cool. It's so interesting. You're making this stuff so accessible, and that's really valuable. So I've got the bias where I want people to use VBT because I want them to use the product that I'm building, but I also just think it's a great way to track. I think it's a great way to get more data around what you're doing, understand your own lifting better so that you can get more results, train smarter as well as harder, and get a better outcome. Whether you're an athlete, powerlifter, general gym goer, I think there's a lot of value there. So that's where I spend most of my time is I'm not doing any coaching anymore, whereas I used to be a full-time 45 hours a week on the floor gym coach. So we've got a high-performance facility here in Melbourne where I work, where we do, it's effectively a private high-performance institute. So we take paying members, they pay memberships, and we do performance testing, training, all this stuff. So we don't have a high school program for sports the same way America does here in Australia. It's not as committed, regimented, and stuff like that. So they often don't do their weights work at school. Like they'll have a school team, but more stuff is done in clubs. So you'll play for a club right. in your suburb or your town or field, whatever. And so athletes play their teams, but they often don't have weight room facilities and they're not at them, those clubs all the time. So they can't just jump into the weight room during lunch or whatever it is. So that's what we kind of do, is we try and add that high school, college level weights program, but for young, enthusiastic athletes who want to go to the next level. So we often send a lot of athletes to college. They'll come to us in year 10. So they're sort of sophomore, junior year at high school and go, I want to do this college thing. Maybe they're a high level, sort of state level player here in Australia. And then we'll get them ready. We'll teach them how to do Olympic lifts. We'll teach them how to squat properly, get them strong, get them robust. So when they go over there, they don't get broken, because it's a step up in intensity when you go play in America, particularly for the basketballers, because they're in Australia, they're often very talented, but not super athletic yet. And so we help them with that athleticism side. And so that's where sort of most experience. I was doing that for about 8-10 years before we started this tech piece. And then the other part of my job historically has been running internships. So doing education for our in-house interns who come from the local universities. Also doing sports science degrees. They come to us for 6 months of practical experience, and we help them bridge that gap from, you know, understanding anatomy, understanding the theory of all this stuff, to actually being able to apply it in the gym when you've got an athlete in front of you who's got a problem. How do you solve that? How do you communicate with that athlete? Those sort of things. So pretty passionate about sort of good coaching and smart, conscious coaching, being stuck in the weeds of theory and academia, but also actually being able to go, okay, now you've got an athlete. What are you going to do? How are you going to apply that? And I think VBT is sometimes still stuck in academia as well. It's still a bit too theoretical versus, okay, you've got that, you know, like talk about the novice athlete. How are you going to use the numbers? You've got the advanced athlete. How are you going to use numbers? How are you going to motivate them? How are you going to explain right. this stuff?
Because the numbers don't mean the same to each group, the yeah. intermediate and the advanced athlete. A lot of times that advanced athlete is just trying to extend the career another 2 or 3 more seasons or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
What do they really need to be doing, and how is a big question. Listen, we go back and forth and a lot with the folks that are on, and what we really like to find out about is the state of the profession. I'm going to ask you a question. Don't know how much you know about the state of the profession in the States, but speak to the state of the profession in Australia. And what do you think, performance, strength coach, that whole performance realm, how is it going right now from your perspective?
That's a broad, that's a broad and loaded question, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. You can answer it any way you want to include not answering it, because we're not trying to put you on the spot while we put you on the spot.
There's a few bits to unpack, I think. I think the universities are doing a great job here in Australia, doing a great job teaching the theory. So I think kids understand anatomy, they understand biomechanics, they understand joints and levers and, you know, tissue and things like that. But I think the students often, either they're not enthusiastic enough about it, or they're not being pushed enough to get their hands dirty and get into a football club and start, learn a little bit of massage and go start massaging athletes. Learn how to tape ankles and go tape ankles at a football team. I think those sort of things, that actually just getting their hands in and getting in the field, working side by side with physical therapists or physiotherapists, as we call them, not physical therapists. Getting their hands in and actually getting in there and interning, do you think is something that's still, isn't embraced enough here in Australia. So I remember when I did my degree, I did an internship in my second year, then I did a part-time one in my third year, and then I did the one here at Court Advantage full-time, so basically full-time during my third year of university, which is the final year here in Australia. And I did those three internships because I learned more in those three internships than I did during the entire degree, just in terms of communicating with athletes. I've got 20 15-year-old, you know, Australian rules footballers. I've got to warm them up, and they're distracted and they're annoying each other and they're tired from school. It's like, shit, my perfect planned warm-up has gone out the window because these kids aren't paying any attention. Let's just get a game going. Let's just get them running around playing tag, for goodness sake. Like, just do something with those athletes. So I think learning to be reactive and learning to think on your feet is a skill that's still lacking at the university graduate level. Those students, they're very good theoretically, and you give them enough time and you give them a textbook, they'll be able to give you a really good answer. But then they're like, okay, you've got a team of 8 professional female basketballs out there. Go run the workout. They really struggle to do that sort of stuff. And that just takes practice. You've just got to do reps. You've just got to, you know, sit there and watch 10 of those sessions and then assistant coach for 5 more of those sessions and then try and run the warm-up of those sessions. You just build those skills gradually. So I think that embracing that need to develop those skills and treating them like skills the same way you would trying to get a pass in your uni degree, trying to get a pass and an A-plus in these kind of skills is really valuable.
I think we have several guests on that call those what you're talking about, I believe, are the soft skills. Being able to communicate, being able to recognize and understand, adjust, and then on the fly, change your plan, but don't completely abandon your plan.
Mm, yeah, exactly. Having a flexible, dynamic plan, but also knowing where you're going the whole time.
Right.
So that you know where you're going, you know, for round one of the season or for, you know, this stage of your block, whatever it is, but being flexible on the way. So that each session might adjust a little bit as we go.
So we're down to our last few minutes. I always hate to end these things, but I always end them the same way. We're going to invite you back. Chris, do you have any final words? And then we'll give Jacob his last words and we'll wrap it up for this edition.
Jacob, thanks for coming on. It was a pleasure having you as a guest. I hope everybody enjoys this episode when they get a chance to listen to it. Give us your final words. You know, give a shout out to Metric VBT. Tell them where they can find it. Tell them how much it's going to cost them after that trial. And hopefully you're off to a good start, man.
Well, first of all, thanks so much for having me, guys. I really appreciate that you connected via social media. I hadn't heard of your podcast until you got in touch. And I was like, this is so cool. This is great. So I jumped through the 2 episodes this season that came before me, not 1. I'm in episode 3 for the season, which is
pretty cool. There
you go. got that math down. That took us 60 minutes. Metric is an iPhone app at the moment. We are working on Android, so that'll come soon for our Android lovers out there. iPhone app, it's currently in beta, so it's not actually public on the App Store as of the end of March, but we are like days away. We are days away from launching. So probably by the time you've listened to this episode, we will be on the App Store. So you can check us out on metric.coach is our website. That's where you'll find everything about the app. That's where you'll find the button to go download it. We're on Instagram and Twitter as well for Metric, so we'll start pushing out some content with that. It'll be free forever, so you can use the basic version of the app without having a trial. So if you want, you can just use the free version, which is a simplified kind of feature set. You can use that as long as you like without having to worry about, you know, being charged in 14 days or 28 days or whatever it is. But there will also be a premium version that will have a paid subscription. The price for that, we're not sure yet. It'll start pretty cheap. It'll have less features, a few bucks a month kind of thing. But then as we add more advanced features, there'll be an even expanded pro version, which might maybe 10 bucks a month, 12 bucks a month, something like that. So not much more than your Netflix subscription. But by that stage, it'll be storing all your training videos. You'll have sharing with your coach features, advanced metrics, advanced analysis, all that kind of contextual progress tracking stuff we talked about will be in there as well. We haven't built that stuff yet, but it's on its way. So apps move fast, so you add features pretty quickly. So I don't want to commit to anything that is or isn't in the app, because by the time you listen to this app, because podcasts can be listened to for months and months, the game will change. But if you go to metric.coach, that'll have all the details. There's a blog there, a change log with all the apps, app features that have been added, and the button, of course, to download on Apple and then maybe Android by the time you're listening to this as well.
So when you come back and talk to us about what's going on then, you're going to tell us about all the integrations for the app too, right?
So when I come back, I'll come back on next time with more concrete answers about what the app does and doesn't do.
No, you're good to go.
Where it fits in and how it is.
Well, again, Jacob, thanks for coming on the show. Again, it was our pleasure, and you can have the honors, my friend.
Take it, man.
This has been another episode of The Performance Talk with Ewell Gordon and Chris Costa. Today's guest is Jacob Tober, VBT coach, Metric VBT. Check it out on the App Store very soon. Thanks for listening.
That's it for another episode of Performance Talk. Come back next time as Ewell and Chris welcome their next guest to the show to discuss what's going on in performance. For sponsorship information, or if you would like to be part of the show, leave your inquiry at theperformancetalk@gmail.com. That's theperformancetalk@gmail.com. Be sure to check in for future episodes of Performance Talk.